You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings 12, this is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, along with Rob Rang. Happy Wednesday to all of our listeners. Jam-packed episode coming up as we look at the key matchups in Sunday's game between the Seahawks and Patriots. This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. See all the action from every game with full game replays. You can also replay an entire game and catch all of the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The Pro Football Hall of Fame today unleashed nominees for the class of 2021, 130 of them, including 14 first-time nominees, players that are now for the first time eligible to get to Canton as a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Rob, there were 7 players with Seahawks ties on this list of 130 players. There's a couple of them that are very familiar names, a couple of them maybe that are not so much, and a handful of these guys didn't play very long in Seattle too, but that's beside the point. I think the most notable is that both Sean Alexander and Ricky Waters, again, being nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, neither one of them has been able to get over the hump to get into Canton. Alexander has never even been a semifinalist. Ricky Waters has been a semifinalist in the past, but has not been able to get beyond that point. Alexander and Waters, once again, with a great opportunity to have their bust in Canton potentially.
Yeah, I think that they are certainly the headliners. There were 7 former Seahawks that were nominated. Ricky Waters, Sean Alexander, Dave Craig. You mentioned that a couple of the players that were only in Seattle for a little while. Kevin Williams, the big defensive tackle, who, of course, played a great amount of his career with the Minnesota Vikings, as well as a couple of specialists in John Casey and Jeff Fiegels, and then another player who only had one season in Seattle, the great playmaking safety Merton Hanks, who had such a great career with the San Francisco 49ers. But it's a testament to the Seahawks that they have this many players who are eligible for the Hall of Fame. I absolutely would agree with you that I think it's the three skill position players, so-called skill position players, in Sean Alexander, obviously a former NFL MVP, Ricky Waters, we know what a versatile back that he was. And then, of course, Dave Craig and just his career numbers. I think you can match those up against just about anybody. Frankly, Corbin, I would be surprised if any one of those players winds up actually getting elected into the Hall of Fame, although I think you could make a strong argument for any one of those three, as well as Kevin Williams.
And I've been saying this for a long time. I think of those three players that Sean Alexander has the biggest argument. When you look at the fact that he was a league MVP, he had over 1,100 yards in 5 straight seasons from 2001 to 2005 and scored 100 career touchdowns as well. He was just dynamic during that 5 years. And I know that everybody likes to make the argument that he failed to reach 10,000 career rushing yards. His career hit a wall after he had that record-breaking season in 2005. He just wasn't the same player. He battled injuries, never got to 1,000 yards in a season again in Seattle, was out of the league 3 years later. But he had 8 very solid seasons in Seattle overall, was just short of that 10,000 rushing yard mark in his career. And I think the fact that he got to 100 rushing touchdowns and he was just so darn consistent with his dominance in a 5-year span. He had as good of a 5 years as you're going to see from an NFL running back. So I agree with you. I don't think he's going to get in this year. Maybe down the road he's able to get in, but I certainly think that he has a Hall of Fame caliber resume playing on some of the best teams in Seahawks history. As for Ricky Waters, I think you could make an argument statistically that he belongs in Canton more than Sean Alexander does. I think what's really hurt him is his personality. Media members did not like working with Ricky Waters during his career. He just was a mercurial personality that wasn't very easy to like. And I think that's played a big role in preventing him from getting enshrined to this point. You look at the numbers, though. He had seven seasons with more than 1,000 rushing yards, 91 total touchdowns, nearly 15,000 yards from scrimmage in his career, won a Super Bowl. I think you could make a very strong argument as a football player that he belongs there, but there's a reason that we are now approaching 20 years since he retired and he still has not gotten in.
Yeah, but it is unfortunate. I would agree with you. I think that the personality hurts him a little bit. I think the fact that he bounced around. I mean, the first 3 years of his career in San Francisco, next 3 years of his career in Philadelphia, and then the final four in Seattle. But, 10 seasons in the NFL, eight of those, Corbin, in which he had at least 40 receptions. And, so it wasn't just the fact that he was a terrific running back, of course, but he was such a phenomenal receiver out of the backfield. In a lot of ways, he actually was a little bit ahead of his time. I think that if you were to put him in today's game, then he would just be absolutely spectacular. And in terms of numbers, I mean, going back to Sean Alexander, my goodness, you talked about it, that he had that five-year stretch that was just unbelievable. I mean, 5 years in a row where he had at least 14 touchdowns on the ground, and of course the MVP season. I mean, just imagine these numbers for those fantasy football enthusiasts out there. 1,880 rushing yards, 27 touchdowns in that 2005 season. I mean, just absolutely incredible numbers. And obviously, unlike Ricky Waters, Alexander played virtually his entire career, except for the very, very end where he only had a couple of games in Washington, but all of it in Seattle. To me, it's something similar to with Dave Craig and Kevin Williams as well. If they had played in a bigger market, I think that Sean Alexander would be a Hall of Famer. I think that Ricky Waters could potentially be one as well. And again, I mentioned Kevin Williams before. Just what a big body guy. You don't normally see guys who are 6'5", 320 pounds that wind up being as productive as he was, not only as a run stuffer, but also as a pass rusher. 63 career sacks, played into the point where he was 35 years old. This guy was one of the more durable, consistent, and versatile defensive linemen of his generation.
I love that you're bringing up Williams, because on this list, the top four players there, as much as I'm going to continue to push for Sean Alexander to be in the Hall of Fame, I believe that he's deserving to be there. Kevin Williams has the best case of any of those four players. He was a first-team All-Pro five times in his career, and you mentioned the fact he had 63 sacks at 320 pounds, extremely durable, did not miss time. The 1 year he played in Seattle, he had three sacks, and he played a key role as a rotational player at that point for a team that got back to the Super Bowl. So he had a solid one season with the Seahawks. With Minnesota, though, he was an absolute monster. Dave Craig's overall numbers stack up favorably when you look at him compared to a lot of greats. He's 18th all-time in touchdown passes with 261 of them. Had over 38,000 passing yards in 213 games. But I do think that people that dock him for longevity being a major factor behind those stats, I actually think that it makes a lot of sense. He was only a Pro Bowler three times, wasn't an All-Pro selection. He was very consistent. He played a lot of games, had a really good career. And the fact that he had four seasons of 20 or more interceptions, I think, also really hurts his stock trying to make it into Canton. So, again, it's great to see all those names on there with an opportunity potentially to get in the Hall. I would think with this list this year, with Kevin Williams being a first time on the ballot, that he's got the best chance of potentially being a semifinalist, maybe even being a finalist that ends up having a chance to get in the Hall right away. I'd be surprised if he's first ballot, but certainly I think in the next few years, there's a really good chance that Kevin Williams is going to get in, and maybe down the road, one of those other three players is going to have a chance. I don't think you're going to see any of the other guys here, Merton Hanks, Jeff Beagles, John Casey, as great as it is to be nominated, I don't see them ever getting past that point.
Yeah, I think that that Merton Hanks was a splashy playmaker for the 49ers for a long time. I mean, his 33 career interceptions is very impressive. But at the same time, we've talked about how extraordinary the safety play has been in Seattle. And so I think that he is somebody that a lot of Seahawks fans aren't going to focus in on too much. And while he was very good at the 49ers, you can't just continue to put every 49er on those great teams, in the Hall of Fame. And so I think that that he is a guy that unfortunately slips out. And then one real quick note on Dave Craig. I agree with you. To me, he has Hall of Fame numbers based on how long he played. To me, what is so great about him is his durability, is his grit. You know, when I was doing the NFL draft stuff, every year I'd write an article called Diamonds in the Rough. To me, Dave Craig was basically the epitome of that. Coming from the small school that which he did, and to have the success which he did, not only in Seattle, but throughout his entire career in the NFL, I think it might just take my cap off to him. To me, he is one of the ultimate competitors.
When we come back for the second quarter, it's on to New England, as Bill Belichick would say if he was the Seahawks coach. We're going to be looking at key matchups for Seahawks versus Patriots, our upcoming primetime game on Sunday night. We're going to move forward with the Seahawks offense against the Patriots defense when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays and see all the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. And NFL Game Pass is the only place you can replay every game all season long. You'll also learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL Game Pass film session episodes. Go inside the game from a player's perspective as they break down the game's concepts and techniques. Learn from the best like Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Devontae Adams, and many more. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL Films archive. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Over the next two quarters, we're going to really start to dive deep in this upcoming matchup, the 1-0 Seahawks against the 1-0 Patriots. New England coming to town. First game at CenturyLink Field for the 2020 season. No fans, at least at this point, the first three home games minimum. There'll be no fans. But nonetheless, the Seahawks are hoping to get a victory in their first game at home. Let's talk some key matchups here. First and foremost, though, some additions and departures for the New England Patriots on defense. They have a lot of new faces, and it's not just because of free agency. They lost some key guys. They lost Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins, two very good linebackers. Defensive tackle Danny Shelton, Pacific Northwest fans know very well, former Washington standout. He's now with the Lions. They lost Patrick Chung and Dante Hightower, both opting out due to COVID-19. So you're talking about five guys that were starters on this defense a year ago that are no longer there, and yet this still remains a formidable unit.
Yeah, and I'm happy that you mentioned that the defense first, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are thinking that, you know, the New England Patriots lost Tom Brady. Well, of course they did. And we'll be talking about, you know, how they replaced him in the third quarter. But, you know, this still remains one of the better defenses, especially in the secondary, in all of the NFL. We saw that in week one with the way that they were able to just basically dominate the Miami Dolphins. And I get that the Miami Dolphins aren't a great team, but at the same time, they certainly, you know, manhandled that squad. And so to me, again, it's a testament to Bill Belichick and the fact that they are able to find these guys, these relatively no-name players, to be able to replace some of the biggest stars, as you just mentioned, that the Patriots had lost. So I'm very interested in this particular matchup, especially considering the fact that the Seahawks went against a team that they're going to know very, very well, with the Atlanta Falcons, of course, coached by Dan Quinn, former Seahawks defensive coordinator, and all of the familiarity that Seattle had with the Atlanta Falcons, to going to a team that is basically a bunch of guys that they haven't competed against very often, you know, in the New England Patriots, and a team that is just built a little bit differently in terms of size, in terms of physicality, in terms of technique, but maybe lack the straight line speed and playmaking ability along the defensive line that the Atlanta Falcons offered just this last weekend.
Let's talk matchups here. First, the first one we have to go with, I think, has to be DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett going up against Stephon Gilmore, last year's 2019 NFL Defensive Player of the Year. I asked Pete Carroll today what it is that makes Stephon Gilmore such a special player, and he immediately pointed out some of the physical traits, the size, the really good feet that he's got under him are as good as you're going to find. But he outlined instincts as the primary reason that Gilmore is head and shoulders above everybody else right now. He is the best corner in football. And so, again, he pointed those instincts teaming up, coupling with those physical traits that he has. There's a reason that he's been a first-team All-Pro the last 2 years. Again, he was Defensive Player of the Year last season. So this is going to be a much different test for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Last week, they were going against very inexperienced corners in A.J. Terrell and Isaiah Oliver that don't have Pro Bowls or All-Pros to their name. They're just trying to find their way in this league. Stephon Gilmore, he is going to get up there. He'll press in your face. He can drop back off the ball. He's just the complete corner. And so I am just fascinated to watch this because I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are as good of receivers as you're going to find in the NFC. It's the best versus the best, and you're always looking forward to that when you watch NFL football.
Exactly. I mean, that's why you play the game, is to compete against the absolute best. And you know, Jason McCourty at the other cornerback spot is not a bad player himself. But yeah, Gilmore is really where it starts with the Patriots. Again, absolutely fantastic secondary, even with the loss of Patrick Chung, as you mentioned, you know, heading into this. And so that's where I think that you have to kind of start here. From a physical standpoint, I'd love to see Gilmore, the 6'1", 205 pounder that he is, go up against DK Metcalf, just because I think that would be fascinating. At the same time, Gilmore's agility, his burst is something that I think is going to make him problematic for a guy like Tyler Lockett as well. And I love that you mentioned that, you know, against the Atlanta Falcons, while they have a lot of young talent there and in the, you know, couple of year veteran Isaiah Oliver, as well as the rookie AJ Terrell, it was fairly clear that at times it was almost like a cat and mouse kind of game between Russell Wilson and his receivers, and the way they were able to get open against Atlanta's pretty young secondary. That's not going to be the case with the New England Patriots. And so I, from a football perspective, I think that the matchup between Seattle's wide receivers and New England's corners, I think is going to be basically worth the price of admission by itself.
And with that matchup, Stephon Gilmore being a much better corner, McCourty as well, experienced guys that are really good at their craft, there's going to be less opportunities most likely to get the football to Metcalf and Lockett. They're going to have a harder time creating separation against those really talented corners. And so I think it is worth noting another matchup that could work in Seattle's favor is the tight end group. Greg Olsen, Will Dissly, Jacob Hollister. Maybe we can include Luke Wilson in here as well. Going up against the Patriots linebackers. Now, I know New England, they could scheme this to have safeties end up in coverage against the tight ends, and I think it's going to happen some in this game. But when you have vertical threats like Metcalf and Lockett, and Philip Dorsett's back to play against his former team, you have to deal with all three of those guys on the field. You're going to be hard-pressed to play single high coverage all the time. They may have to mix in some two deep coverages, and that is going to create matchups where you're going to have Olsen and Dissly going up against Juwan Bentley and Brandon Copeland, two of the Patriots linebackers. This is a group that certainly is going to miss having Dante Hightower out there. There's a lot less experience. And I think Bentley and Copeland going up against Olsen and Dissly, if you are given that matchup frequently, I think Russell Wilson is going to try to exploit it early and often.
I agree with you. And I think that's something that the Miami Dolphins try to do as well. I mean, the Dolphins have some intriguing talent at the running back and tight end positions that they were trying to match up on New England safeties. I was able to watch this game and kind of anticipating the way that Seattle would match up against New England's vaunted secondary. And I thought that was interesting that, you know, for all of the talent that New England has on their defense, their safeties, Adrian Phillips and Devin McCourty, wound up being two of the Patriots' top five tacklers in that first game against the Miami Dolphins. And that's with Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing the football rather than Russell Wilson. And I don't mean any disrespect to Ryan Fitzpatrick, but at the same time, he is certainly not an MVP candidate the way that I think that Russell Wilson is, has has been and will continue to be. So I really think that that is going to be a matchup that the Seahawks are going to be looking to exploit. From a football perspective, I love the matchup from the receivers and corners. I think that's just going to be a lot of fun in terms of actually trying to win the game. From a Seahawks perspective, I think that you're going to see Russell Wilson try to attack down the seams a little bit. And obviously, I think the Seahawks are going to have a little bit more of a return to the ground and pound attack that they have been basically Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer's MO to this point.
And that's a perfect segue for the last matchup that you and I outlined here. Last week, we were looking at the tackles going up against the Falcons' athletic edge rushers, Tack McKinley, Dante Fowler Jr. I think the key this week for the Seahawks starts in the meat of that offensive line, in the interior. Damian Lewis, I'll tell you what, I know he had a couple holding penalties in his debut, but he really held his own physically against Grady Jarrett in the run game. And so I'm really fascinated to see what he does in game number two, going against potentially Lawrence Guy and Adam Butler. I think Lawrence Guy might be the most underrated player on New England's defense. He's a really good football player, and he's a stout run defender, good size. You could play him at the five tech position too. You can move him around some of the line. And so I think that putting him against Lewis, Mike Iupati on the other side, Ethan Posick may get some reps against those guys in the interior as well. I think they are going to have to really impose their will up front in the trenches in this game, because I know that the Patriots are going to scheme to try to slow down that Seahawks passing game. I think they're going to have to lean on that run game more. It's going to have to be more of a balanced attack to find success this week and get the victory.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating just because I do agree with you. I think that you know, given how successful that Russell Wilson has already been this year and obviously has been in the past, the Patriots know Russell Wilson very, very well. I think that you're not going to see a repeat of last week. I think that the Patriots are going to know that they have to focus a great deal of their attention on trying to slow down Seattle's passing attack. That said, again, because New England secondary is so good, I think that New England has the big bodies and the kind of the tough guys, the linebacker and defensive tackle positions. As you mentioned, Lawrence Guy is a good football player. Adam Butler is a guy that not a lot of people know about, but he's 6'5", 310 pounds. He's a much bigger, stouter guy than what the Seahawks were facing a week ago with the Atlanta Falcons. And so I think it's going to be fascinating to see if Seattle is able to run the ball right down New England's throat. I think that that's absolutely going to be part of their strategy. I think they're going to try to do it, but I'm not so sure that they're going to be as successful as they want to be, considering the fact that obviously this is just the second game in which the Seahawks have been able to play with no preseason.
Still trying to mesh as an offensive line, no question about it. Miami had very little success running the football last week. That being said, I don't think that they have the running back talent, not even close to the running back talent that Seattle has. And so I am very curious to see how that plays out, because the Seahawks have had some success running against the Patriots in the past. I have to wait and see what happens. We come back in the third quarter. We're going to switch over to the Seahawks defense going up against the Patriots on offense. A new quarterback under center for New England after nearly two decades of Tom Brady being the guy there. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for the Wednesday show, my co-host, Rob Rang. Continuing our key matchups to watch coming up on Sunday, We're expecting another primetime thriller between the Seahawks and Patriots, this one being at CenturyLink Field. These teams both look much different than the ones that played against each other back in 2016. You still had the Legion of Boom in the secondary for the Seahawks, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman. All of those guys are now gone. New England, meanwhile, has a totally different quarterback under center, Tom Brady, now in Tampa Bay, and going with a much different style by bringing in Cam Newton only a few weeks before the start of training camp. Newton beats out Stidham for the job, and now he's 1-0 as the Patriots quarterback. I think we have to start when we're looking at Seahawks matchups on defense against the Patriots. It's only fitting that we have Cam Newton, the big 250-pound running quarterback that can barrel over linebackers, going up against the best linebacker in the game in Bobby Wagner.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to come down to, for the Seahawks on defense, is being able to stop Cam Newton. Obviously, anytime that you're going against the New England Patriots in the past with the great Tom Brady, it all started with trying to slow him down, but they're just such completely different quarterbacks. Cam Newton, as you mentioned, 250 pounds, 6'5", he's built like a defensive end, and he is able just to knock down most linebackers. But, Wagner has always been a very physical player. Obviously, he's a very speedy player, and the New England Patriots basically tipped their hand a little bit, at least in my opinion, with showing what they're going to look to do. I mean, this is still Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator. They're still going to try to feature those slot receivers. Julian Edelman is still one of the absolute best, but there is not the same rapport between Cam Newton and Julian Edelman. I thought that it was, very interesting the way that New England attacked Miami Dolphins, a team that I thought, frankly, that they should be able to kind of wipe the field with a little bit. But 18 of their 29 first downs, Corbin, were via the running game, and so much of that was Cam Newton. He had 15 rushing attempts. That's as many completions as he had in this game. And of those rushing attempts, he ran for 75 yards, 8 first downs, 2 touchdowns. Sony Michel, the former first round pick, was the only other back to get, the only other runner, I should say, to get double digit carries. And he only averaged 3.5 yards a carry. So it really was the Cam Newton show, because the Seahawks have, as you said, Bobby Wagner, one of the great linebackers, and not only in the NFL right now, but in the NFL all time. Then I think that this is a matchup that the Seahawks can potentially win.
As Wagner said, this is going to be a game that tests your will, and he likes the will of this defense, the physicality that they bring to the table. But as he mentioned, if you don't tackle Cam Newton, if you don't bring your hard hat, he is going to fall forward for 5 yards. And if that's happening regularly, your defense is going to get worn out. It's going to be a long afternoon. The Seahawks have had quite a bit of success against Cam Newton over the years. He certainly has beaten them a few times, but the Seahawks have gotten the last laugh more times than not. And so there is a lot of familiarity here, even though Newton is now in a system that is a little different. As you mentioned, McDaniels is going to continue to emphasize that short to intermediate passing game, especially with their slot receivers. That's not something that's going to change. But now you were never going to see Tom Brady running quarterback power. That is something that you have to be prepared for. Could you imagine Tom Brady trying to run quarterback power?
I think it'd be kind of fun to watch.
I don't know. At 43 years old, maybe 15 years ago, he could have tried that. But, yeah, they're going to be running your quarterback power. They're going to be running counters with their quarterback, with Newton. They're going to be running your read option game. You might even see him sprinkle in a triple option play. They're going to be doing all kinds of different stuff, as Pete Carroll noted. We've seen Cam Newton over the years do everything, so they're trying to prepare for everything. It's going to be a difficult game to game plan for. You only have one game with him in this offense that you can look over and try to evaluate. So there's a lot of different wrinkles New England could bust out. So I absolutely think Newton versus Wagner, that's a primetime individual matchup that I can't wait to watch on Sunday night. Let's talk offensive line versus the pass rush. And I got really specific here. Jermaine Elmenor, their right tackle, was supposed to be Marcus Cannon, but he opted out with COVID-19. And so now they have Elmenor in a right tackle. This seems to me like a prime opportunity for Benson Maiola, who already had a really good game in week 1, had a sack and a pass breakup on 4th down. This seems like another chance for him to feast, and I think Alton Robinson is going to dress this week, especially with Rasheem Green still dealing with a shoulder issue. I think this could be a chance for maybe Alton Robinson to make a splash play or two in that matchup, going against the guy that was supposed to be the second-string right tackle for the Patriots in 2020.
Yeah, I think that is a great opportunity for him. LJ Collier as well. I think that, we saw some splashy plays from both Collier and Mayo in the first game. And you mentioned Rasheem Green. I think that's one of the reasons why the Seahawks had brought in Breeland Speaks and DeMarcus Christmas as well in a workout. We talked about that yesterday. I think it's very possible that Mayoya and Robinson might be able to get a sack in this game. At the same time, I think you have to be careful, though, because if you rush upfield too much, you're just going to create a very easy rushing lane for Cam Newton to exploit. And so that one of the reasons why I think that the Seahawks are in a good position to be able to do that and rush their edge guys upfield is, again, because they have such speed at the linebacker position. So I think that this is a terrific matchup to watch, kind of like we talked about before with the wide receivers for Seattle going against New England's defensive backs. I think that this is going to be one to watch as far as evaluating where the Seahawks are going to be able to go. At the same time, I'm not so convinced that this is going to be the slam dunk win for the Seahawks that it might look like on paper.
Well, I think you and I agree on that. I'm expecting this to be a dogfight. It's the Patriots. They're coached by Bill Belichick. They've got a more than capable quarterback in Cam Newton there. A little bit more on that matchup. You were talking about the edge rushers having to be careful getting upfield. That is absolutely 110% true. I don't care if Cam Newton is now in his 30s. He showed last week he can still run the football. And if you do get upfield like that and you're not able to get home, you're not able to turn the corner, you are creating those big gaps for him to just tuck and run. And this is not a guy that is going to just duck down a lot of the time. Cam Newton is going to be looking for contact, even with the injuries he's had. If you watch the game this past weekend, he's still somebody that is looking to barrel through defenders. That's just his game. He's 250 pounds. He's a freight train. And so I don't care who your linebackers are. I mean, Bobby Wagner has won that matchup plenty of times, but still, you hit Cam Newton going downhill, and he's got a lot of running room to work with. That is not ideal. So the pass rushers do have to be guarded. You want to be quick off the line. You want to try to get the corner, but you've also got to be careful that you don't create those opportunities for him. You mentioned Julian Edelman earlier. Edelman has been Tom Brady's go-to guy for a long time. He doesn't have Tom Brady here anymore. He's now got Cam Newton, who completed almost 70% of his passes the other day, or completed almost 80% of his passes, actually. He was very accurate, very efficient. Not a spectacular day passing yardage-wise, no touchdowns through the air, but he was very effective getting the football to his receivers. There's still going to be some time for these guys to continue to learn one another, but I've still got that matchup outlined with the inexperience the Patriots have. N'Keal Harry was one of my favorite receiving prospects a couple years ago. I still think he's going to be a very good NFL player in time, but right now their main target is still Julian Edelman. Having him go up against Marquise Blair, who is still going to be in just his second game playing that slot cornerback position, and I even included Jamal Adams here a little bit. He's very familiar with the Patriots, having played for the Jets the last 3 years. I could see the Seahawks getting him matched up against Edelman in the slot some in this game as well. So that's going to be some much-see TV there. Get your popcorn ready.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a fascinating matchup. I mean, because obviously Edelman being the, kind of that classic New England Patriots slot receiver, small, very, very quick, incredibly tough, terrific hands. And as mentioned before, this is still Josh McDaniels is going to be calling plays, and he is still going to want to throw the football. And I love that you mentioned the Cam Newton's passing game, because, it's not fair just to characterize him as just this big brute of a running quarterback. He was absolutely terrific in that game. 15 of 19. Again, only 155 yards, so it wasn't the great production in that regard, but still 15 of 19, even against air, is still pretty impressive. But at the same time, the fact that you are focusing on Julian Edelman, I think, really is the key matchup here. So I think that Bobby Wagner against Cam Newton trying to slow down New England's running game, I think is going to be absolutely priority number one. But But priority number two, I believe, at least when it comes to the passing game, would be to slow down Julian Edelman, who led the Patriots in targets, in receptions, in receiving yards, in everything. Four first downs. The Patriots only had, Corbin, 8 first downs through the passing attack. So for one player to have had half of that, I think that obviously shows that where New England likes to throw the ball, even though it is Cam Newton rather than Tom Brady. I 100% agree with you on N'Keal Harry, big body wide receiver who I think is about ready to kind of take the next step after a little bit of a disappointing rookie season. But I really like his physical upside. He's not a speed burner. And so I think he's going to be a little bit different matchup on the outside. I think I like the size and physicality of Sal on the outside. But Edelman, his quickness, if it's going to be against Blair, if it's going to be against Jamal Adams, if it's going to be against a Ugo Amadi, I think that's something that the Seahawks have to be worried about, as well as the variety of running backs that the Patriots have. That, I think, is going to be something they're going to be looking to try to get Cam Newton throwing them the ball more than they did in that first game, where there was only a couple of receptions, 3 to James White, 1 to the little running back, J.J. Taylor. I would expect the Patriots to throw the ball to the backs a little bit more. I just think the Seahawks are in great position to defend that, again, because of their safeties and the linebackers.
I agree with you 110%. I think really when it comes down to it, Edelman, as I've mentioned a couple times here, he is the X factor here because he's just so crafty and his quickness. And if there was one thing I noticed with Marquise Blair in training camp, that was one area where he was occasionally having some issues, especially when he had to go against Tyler Lockett. I don't think Edelman is quite the athlete that Tyler Lockett is, but he is so darn crafty and he's such a good route runner. He knows how to get open out of his releases. And so this is going to be a really big test for Marquise Blair to see where he's at that position. I'm curious to see how he holds up against a guy that has been one of the best slot receivers in the NFL for a really long time. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a sponsor for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, contact me, lockseahawks@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by visiting us at lockedonseahawks.com. Coming up on Thursday, I'll be joining my good friend Mike DeBate of Locked On Patriots. It's Crossover Thursday. We're going to be breaking every little detail down from this upcoming matchup between the Seahawks and Patriots coming up on Sunday Night Football. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.